for me, like I could watch TV, like watching any James Bond movies on my TV by getting a DVD out and just put it on the side of the TV and just watch it, you know. Because watching those things can really help me like calm myself down, you know, in case I wanna feel nicer, you know, be more happy and just.
But I think a lot of Bond fans will see ourselves in that because I mean, I've got this is a poster that I've got in this room of the house. I've got posters in another room of the house. I've got a giant Spectre poster. I mean, this is my day-to-day pen is the GoldenEye Parker Jotter as I've been using this for 10 years. So I think every Bond fan can kind of see himself in that. Hello and welcome to the James Bond Complex, the show where we talk about everything James Bond from Fleming to film and everything in between. Ooh, Edgar's not here. So I'm your host, Emery. I've got some guests today. It's a special episode. We're going to be talking about an annual campaign that I've been doing now for the third year in a row, talking about autism awareness. And I'm very, very lucky to have some members of the Bond community here to talk about this important to us issue and important to everyone issue of the awareness of autism. So first, returning guest, someone we've had on the show many times, Melanie of Burb, James Burb fame.
Thanks for having me on. Good to be back.
Glad to have you. And you actually organized the next two guests because you helped me kind of gain notoriety or to discover these two people, the next two people. Next British Bond addict, Mr. Chris Hunt. How are you today, sir?
Not too bad, thank you. And again, thank you for having me on. It's lovely to be here.
That's absolutely my pleasure. And finally, we've got from London, but a Turkish expat, Mr. Dalen Tedeki. Tekineki.
For those of you how to pronounce my name is you need to pronounce my name Dalian. It's Dalian. Dalyan. It's how do you pronounce it, Dalian?
Perfect. Thank you very much for clearing that up for me.
Thank
I'm
you.
not super great with names sometimes. So, like I said before, we're talking about autism awareness, and it's something that's very near and dear to my heart, and it's something that I've been campaigning for the last 3 years through the Intrepid 007 podcast, and then I brought it along with the James Bond Complex, and Matt and Edgar and Jason have been very helpful with all that. But this year, I wanted to do something different because last year there was maybe a little bit of confusion and there were a little bit of different comments going around on what we were doing. So I want to really focus on the whole awareness of autism and just to kind of give everyone an idea of why I've chosen these hosts. Chris, you are an educator that does work with people who are living with autism. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. Yes, I work in a mainstream school, but the school I work in with particular has quite a few children with autism of varying degrees, some of who need one-to-one support, some of whom are, say, level one and can actually can function reasonably well, but we still have to make adjustments. So I work with autism children on a day-to-day basis.
So academically speaking, Chris, if you want to maybe clarify for people who aren't aware of how the autism spectrum work, because it's not necessarily a hold all, or it's not a catch all of symptoms or of level of effectiveness if I can say it that way. What would your best definition of autism be?
It's interesting. It's one of those things when you go into teaching, it's something you're constantly aware about because it feels like there's going to be so much pressure to try and do the right thing. But like every single child is, it's a completely unique thing that happens. And with enough time, with individual people, with individual children, with individual like cases of everything, you just kind of get used to it. And obviously, when you go into it, you're like, okay, I need to do levels of differentiation here. I need to make sure that the needs are being met. If there's an issue with lack of focus, I need to be able to work in movement breaks. If there's an issue with nonverbal communication, I need to make sure there's visual aids. And it's an amazing thing when you get to know that and it's your daily routine and you discover the personalities, you almost forget you're doing it. When you know exactly what that person needs, in fact, exactly what is working for them, it becomes almost second nature after the first while or so. And that's an amazing thing because also when trust develops and when there's nice camaraderie between them, both parties as teachers and also as pupils, it's something amazing to see, and something I've noticed particularly since being a pupil myself back at school years ago, is actually how much more understanding there is, not only for a level for teachers, but for their peers as well. There's much more education about autism on a daily basis, and there's much more understanding, and it's much more, for want of a better phrase, accepted. The difficulties that some people may have is much more commonly known now, as opposed to it just being, oh, that child has autism. It's now actually, no, way more specific. It's almost autism too much of an umbrella term in each specific case now. So that's a wonderful thing to see, at least I've had in my experience as well.
All right, right on. I think that kind of sums it up. I mean, when I kind of came into contact with it and was introduced to the concept of it, I'd already known about it, but not enough until I had to live it. So that's the perfect explanation. Dalian, how do you define it as someone who's living with autism? How do you define it for yourself?
For me, I have got diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder when I was a 3-year-old child, and during my life, I could, stim, when I stim my hands, in case I'm excited, it's a thing that, for me, as having autism, it's a thing that, autism is just a condition that affects on anybody, no matter whether you're a baby, child, or adult, or who you are. And for me, as having autism, it's a thing that, it's like a condition that affects your brain. It's right. Something that you're born with, and autism is just a disability that won't go away. It's just, it can continue to stay in your brain in your life. That's all I'm saying.
No, but I think that's a good way to describe it as well. I kind of know it firsthand. Melanie, I know that you have some experience with it as well. How do you define it, and how did it come about? How did you react when, or how did you come to, how can I don't know how to explain this, but
my introduction into all of this.
Yes.
So I knew very, very little about it. Very little. I think the only introduction or knowledge that I had about it at the time, which would have been in the 90s, was the movie Rain Man. And right. Of course, the example that you see in that film, to kind of piggyback off what Chris and Dalian were saying, is, it's going to appear different depending on the case, depending on the person. I know Dalian was saying he will stim and such when he gets excited, whereas other children might be, or adults, nonverbal. There's different forms that it takes. And the only thing I knew about it was what I was introduced to in Rain Man. My sister had a little boy, and he was born with Downs.
Okay.
So right away, not a typical child, already had special, was born with special needs. And as he was developing, it was clear that certain things that you will typically see with children with Downs, he was exhibiting some other behaviors, and he was diagnosed with autism as well.
Okay.
So now in his case, he is nonverbal, Downs, and he also has some calcification in his brain as well. So my sister has often said she felt it was often easier for people to relate and interact with him because you could visually see that he was not typical, not a typical child. And in my own experience, so I have a son, and it's actually been pretty heavily debated as to whether or not he might be on the spectrum. He was diagnosed at the age of 2 with sensory processing disorder. And that's something apparently even within the community of people and therapists who work with those affected by autism, it's being debated, can a person have sensory processing disorder outside of the spectrum or not? So like in my nephew's case, it's something that's very, in a very extreme case of it, where, you know, he's nonverbal, having to communicate through visual aids, different things of that nature. Whereas my son, apparently, like, you know, his disorder is, we're not even sure if it's part of the spectrum or not. So it's just such a wide range. And I think that's what makes it sort of so difficult in educating other people, that this looks different depending on the person.
Right. And I kind of learned that as well through some of the groups that I've become a part of over the years, and kind of learning about there's different, it's hard to say different degrees of it, because it's a set of symptoms that can be different from person to person. And you use the example of Rain Man as being, I mean, I think that was for a while the kind of clearest example of it. And I believe if I'm not mistaken, they called it more on the Asperger side in that movie. I haven't seen Rain Man in forever. But I know that some of those aspects are carried over to the spectrum. And like you're saying, with the sensory disorder thing, is it part of the spectrum? Is it not? There's things that kind of like cross over, and it becomes very confusing. And I think that one of the things that is difficult is we don't get very accurate portrayals in the media of this. And I know there are some shows. I don't know if any of you have seen the show Atypical, and if you have, do you think that's an accurate representation? Do you feel it's an accurate representation? Is there another part of the media that you find is a more accurate representation? I'm going to leave this question open to everyone.
I think to sort of to touch back on what you were saying, and Chris is probably more well equipped for the proper up to date terms, but I know in the 90s, I believe the role that Dustin Hoffman played was considered savant, because he was very, right, very intelligent with numbers. I believe Asperger's tends to be struggling in certain social situations, reading, yeah, emotions, reading facial cues,
difficulty with empathy and things like that. Yeah,
and I think it's something with regards to the media. Now, like I said, that was decades ago, and that was my first introduction to it. And I think the media, with the times, has been better about trying to represent more diverse groups of people. You know, you have television shows like Speechless, and you know, and in all different types of afflictions, people dealing with cystic fibrosis. You know, I mentioned Downs earlier, so I think there's better representation of that. I remember a few seasons ago, reality shows as well, like you've got America's Next Top Model had a girl with, right, Asperger's on it. So I feel as though the industry is trying to be, is trying to include a more diverse range of people versus the stars who were all the beautiful, perfect people that we used to see back at the advent of, like, right, television and Hollywood, right? And it's good to see. We're seeing people of different color, different shapes, and dealing with, as you said, different conditions too. So I think it's a step in the right direction.
Chris, do you have an opinion on how autism is portrayed in the media?
I think the one prime example I can think of, and we had this in a staff meeting quite a while ago, and it's a scene from the film The Imitation Game, which I think was 2014, which was about Alan Turing. And there was a big theory that Alan Turing, who created the Enigma machine, massive World War II story, had Asperger's syndrome, and it was never actually fully understood. And the film represents it in a really novel way that actually does quite a lot to kind of help people understand. It's a scene where basically he's working, and the other engineers he's working with say, "Oh, we're going to go grab some lunch." He goes, "Okay." And then they get really upset and really offended that he doesn't want to go to lunch with them, and it becomes like a reoccurring thing. And because obviously the way it's an open-ended question, and as from the mind of someone who has Asperger's syndrome or something in that similar vein, it's made so clear that you can immediately understand what's happening and why. And I have a huge respect for that part of the film, for just saying it as it was and doing it in such a way that not only can you understand why people are getting frustrated, but you can understand why he's miscommunicating it in the first place. And I think for the most recent films or TV, that's the standout one for me. I mean, that scene I was really impressed by overall.
I wasn't aware of that at all. That's it's very interesting that they would portray it in such an honest fashion, because they could have rewritten it to serve the film, but rather they're serving the person themselves and really showing their true nature and how it actually was.
And I think that goes back too to what I was saying with regards to what my sister has said about her son. Mm-hmm. It's something that you can't see. So when you're when you're dealing with people, if you don't know about if you don't know that they're living with this, you feel insulted, you feel hurt, you can feel like they don't want anything to do with you, or they're casting you off. When it's just it's a communication issue.
When you're not kind of aware and you kind of taken out of context. I've seen it many times.
And I think that's something too that the public could be better educated on. All right, what can we do? What can we do to make things easier? You know, if you're in a workplace, if you know of someone who has Asperger's or something, you might approach their desk a little bit differently. If they're better with reading emails, maybe that's how,
better communication.
Right.
It's interesting. The curious that might actually be from what I'm going through at the moment, because it's interesting at my level at the moment, I'm teaching year six in the UK, which is 10 to 11 years old. And it's amazing how open the subject is, which it definitely wasn't when I was back at school. I don't know about you guys, obviously, in many different places. Mm-hmm. It's such an open thing now, and it's actually every pupil is aware of the children in my class who have autism. And it's not like a hush topic. It's not like something they walk around. When they know somebody's about to have a bit of a meltdown, possibly, it's just, hey, this is going to happen. Let's try and prevent this. And it's just a completely open fact. And we have assemblies each year. We have PCSHE lessons, all that sort of stuff, which is just educating, just to give a better idea. And we do this in quite a few subjects. It's not only, obviously, situations like this. So I think the wheels are in motion. I think that's possibly the best way to do it as well, to start young, to make it. It's almost like to make sure it's not feared, bizarrely, in a way. Because I remember back in the time when I was at school, certainly, and I came from a very sheltered middle-class school in countryside England, when somebody joined who had asked, I think it was autism, and everyone was sort of like, there's whispers in the corridors and scares, what's it going to be like? And then all of a sudden the door opened and he was just a normal boy. It's one of those situations.
But it was foreign. It was like, you know, what is this? I think the education portion of it wasn't there. And I think now, and I'm seeing it with my kids, the way that the schools are structured, completely different than when I was a kid. And I went to a normal public school here in Canada, and I don't think it was as, like, I have doubts now thinking back to it of some of my friends. I'm like, well, he definitely might have been or might be on the spectrum because of this, but it was never kind of public knowledge, and it was never, I feel that it's something that was so underdiagnosed for such a long time. Mm-hmm. And I mean, now that I'm in it, I realize it's diagnosed a little bit more, but at the same time, I don't know if it really is. You know what I mean? Like, I experienced it.
Like I was saying, it definitely back in the day, it was underdiagnosed. But even there's some difficult, like I said, even today, like when my son was diagnosed with sensory processing disorder, it's still something that they're trying to decide, well, is this part of the spectrum or not? It's we're still learning more on a daily basis, but I think in the interim, the positive changes that we are seeing is great. And bringing this back to Bond and the movies, it's so refreshing and so nice to see that theaters now are having special showings where the volume is quieter, the lights are up a little bit more, you know, to make some accommodations for people living with this. Yes.
And Dalian, I'd like to kind of hear your opinion a little bit on this, because I mean, you live with it more on a day-to-day basis. So you've experienced like the good and the bad of living with this. How do you feel people perceive you as a person and you know, how you live your life and what you need as a person to make yourself feel comfortable? How do you feel that people accept or are able to?
For me, you know, like for me as autistic, you know, it's a thing that during my childhood, I can be scary. I can be, you know, a bit upset. You know, I could sometimes cry, and then sometimes, you know, I can be a bad person, but obviously I try to speak nicely. You know, for me, it's a thing, you know, it's, I can be, you know, scared of anything, like depend on, like, but the best idea is like 3 years later, I'm not scared of anything, you know, like,
right.
Sometimes I can be scared of any loud noises. Okay. But, you know, but 3 years later, when I hear loud noises, I'm not bothered. So I can just be, you know, put my headphones on and just listen to music.
So for you, things were different when you were younger, and then they've progressively, you've been able to live with it better and, you know, find ways to deal with it better.
For me, you know, I was just like every year I'm just learning my life, you know, every year learning my life, and that's it.
And that's, I mean, it's great that you're able to, you know, I think that's one of the things that's important for people who are living with it, or who know people who are living with it, is to help them, you know, be comfortable with who they are and what they're doing. I mean, it's something that I learned early on as well in dealing with it. This is what makes people feel comfortable. This is what they need. This is how they feel. And I think it's a reflection as well on general mental health in our society now, and how it's kind of progressed. I think that we take care of it a little bit better. I think that kind of sums up everything that I really wanted to get out there about autism awareness. So let's get to the fun bits now. And I know what Mel likes in James Bond. We've had many, many discussions. Dalian, what is your favorite James Bond film of all time?
To be fair, I don't dislike all Bond films. I like any Bond movies, you know, because if I see any Bond movies, I'm not bothered, you know, because the Bond movies I would like to watch is, you know, I wish I watch Dr. No, or I might watch Casino Royale, or No Time to Die, or Spectre. Any Bond movies, really, because I don't dislike all the Bond movies. I just like them all.
You like them all equally? You don't. Yeah. There's not one that you'll go back to more than another one?
You know, if I need a best movie I could watch, is, you know, I might continue to watch Spectre and Casino Royale, you know.
Those are some good choices. But I think that shows that you're an all-round Bond fan. You can watch any one of them, you'll be happy. That's not the same for we can't say that for every Bond fan in the Bond community. There's not every Bond fan who'll say, go like, show me any one, I'll be
all
happy.
Of it. So, you know, I like all the movies. I don't dislike it.
Okay. Chris, what's your experience with James Bond? Because I know I've seen you on Instagram, and I've seen some of the stuff you post, but I want to kind of, like, you know, pick your brain a little bit. What brought you to the world of James Bond?
This is, I'm going to sound awful by comparison now. After that, I'm going to sound absolutely terrible. Basically, got into Bond. I can't remember ever living without Bond in my life, because my dad is a huge fan. And my dad read all the books when he was younger, and just, there was always a VHS playing one of the Bond films. And I got into it that way. And I was obsessed with it from a young age. And video games like GoldenEye 64 really kind of cemented the fact I was a big fan of this. As I grew up, I decided I just kept wanting to go back watching the films. I'd make other people watch the films, all that sort of stuff. I have to say, because of that nostalgia as well, I'm a big Brosnan fan, really. Brosnan's kind of my guy.
I feel you. I think we're in that same kind of generational gap there, that of Bond. Melanie, what are you looking forward to the most this year, in our year 60th anniversary of our Lord James Bond?
Oh, just having some fun. I'm so glad that we have a celebration. I know a lot of fans, after No Time to Die, that was a pretty controversial ending. A lot of fans felt very deflated, disappointed, especially after the rough times that we've had during the pandemic. It was such a long wait for the film. So it's nice to celebrate all of Bond, you know, and absolutely. And exactly what Dalian was saying, appreciate every single film, appreciate them all together as a collective. So I'm really looking forward to that aspect. Just having a big party.
Absolutely.
We can, you know, for this 60th anniversary of Bond, we can have a huge celebration among the Bond community, you know, because the 60th anniversary of Bond will be the good opportunity, you know, let's say, let's sit around the tables, dress up dapper, you know, we can talk about Bond, and, you know, that's what we expect, you know, celebrate the Bond.
And I'm glad you dressed up for this, Dalian, because I obviously didn't as much. I've got this nice shirt from the Q car that he sent me, a nice shirt,
yeah, Peter, but I like your t-shirt. It's so cute.
Yes. Oh, thank you very much. You got to see the back. It's got the DB5 on the back.
There
you
go. Oh, it's nice. Such a cool design. Such a cool design.
He was out in Vancouver, and he's rebuilding these. I think he's going to make a run of probably a dozen of these copies out of carbon fiber. And
I can tell you something. So Melanie is from US.
Yes.
And you are, and Matthew is from Canada.
This is Matthew's Zoom account. I'm Emery, right. And I'm from Canada. Yes, I'm from Eastern Canada, right. In Quebec City. Yeah.
And then me and Chris are from the UK. So you are from Canada with love.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Melanie from US with love.
Yeah, I'm. What is it? The brother, like the
yes, brother from Langley.
Brother from the.
You're the sister from Langley.
Yeah. The sister from Langley, yes.
Well, go ahead.
I was going to say something as well to piggyback on the two points that they're both making. Is actually, since I started the Instagram nearly 2 years ago now, my word, one of the best things that's come out of this is just having conversations from people who like so many different like stars of the films, like talking to the Moore fans, talking to the Dalton fans. And I absolutely adore that aspect of it, because even if it's a Bond film I'm not a big fan of, I'll happily listen to anybody talk about why they love it. And that's the thing about this franchise. Obviously, everybody's got some pretty, there's some stern opinions sometimes, but overall, it's just a lovely thing that brings us all together. And for 60 years, yeah, spread the love.
Celebrate all the differences.
Exactly. You know, I love getting together with Bond fans, and we had the opportunity to do it in Montreal. I know Melanie came to Montreal, and I wasn't able to get out to see you, Mel, and I really wish I could have sat down with you, because I know Shamir was there too. And Shamir and I have very different opinions on Diamonds Are Forever. And we had a wonderful conversation back in October about this. And I know, Sham, you're listening. We've got different opinions on such different films. And I absolutely love talking about Bond films and people being like completely absolute different opinions than yours, and bringing you a side of it that you might not have seen. I recently rewatched Die Another Day, and I've got a completely different perception of Die Another Day now than I did 10 years ago.
And that's it. And I think it goes perfectly with this theme of autism awareness, is celebrate differences.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm glad that we were able to get everyone together from the Bond community to talk about this. And I hope this kind of helps people to understand more. And just to kind of give you a few cues for the campaign that we're running again this year, April 2nd is Autism Awareness Day. What we ask everyone to do, as we've done for the last 2 years, is post yourself in a picture wearing some blue, hashtag Bond in blue. We're going to have the a promotional code that's going to be available from SIS Training Gear. That'll be on our Instagram today when this comes out. Not today, but today when this episode comes out. You'll be able to get the hashtag there, a little discount code if you want to pick yourself up something different on that to dress it up in blue. But just so everyone, you know, kind of spreads the word that, you know, it's autism is a thing. It's something that we need to everyone understand, so that everyone can feel included, but everyone feels comfortable with who they are and what they're doing and how they do it. So thank you, Dalian, for sharing your stories and your personal stories on that. Thanks to Melanie.
It's such a pleasure for having me. I should say to I should say to you thank you, or should I say merci beaucoup in French?
Oh, hey, merci beaucoup, merci beaucoup. It's great to have you on. Thanks to Melanie for putting this together with me and helping me get the guests on. Thank you very much, Chris. It's great to talk to you. I mean, I've been following your Instagram, so it's great to put a voice to the face and kind of dialogue a little bit about Bond and autism.
Lovely to meet you too. And in fact, and I'd say well done again for doing this for your third year, as you said, the Bond and Blue thing. It's fantastic. I can't wait to see how it turns out. Last year was a really good turnout. I can't wait to see it this year.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a good, despite some of the comments, everything was great. And but last year was great for me as well, because a lot of people messaged me privately to talk about it. And, you know, discovering people are living the same thing as you are, or people who are connected to it as well, who are living things that, you know, you didn't know, because it doesn't show, or they don't want to show, or they want to keep it private, they want to keep it to themselves. And I respect everyone's privacy. I don't talk about my personal experience with it too much to protect people's privacy, but like I it needs to be discussed. And I'm thank you. I'm very thankful that you're all so willing and able to participate today.
Thanks again.